Now, whatever its moral and philosophical attractiveness, the free economy I have just proposed, in which no one is allowed to use government power to loot anyone else, is sometimes criticized as a pro-business philosophy that favors the well-to-do. This criticism could not be more off-target. As I have said, businessmen, too, want special favors from government and lobby energetically for all kinds of wealth transfers to themselves. Very rarely does a business owner come to my congressional office to congratulate me on my fidelity to the Constitution. They come by because they want something, and what they want is usually not authorized by the Constitution. I do not claim that businessmen as a class are underhanded or wicked, since I do not believe in making prejudicial generalizations about any group. I am saying only that they are just as likely as anyone else to favor government intervention on their behalf. I have nothing but respect and admiration for honest businessmen. Their contributions to our society are indispensable and almost completely unsung. The entrepreneur who risks everything he has in order to realize a dream and improve our lives in the process is engaged in a worthy and honorable pursuit that earns him precious little respect in our society. Economic historian Burton Folsom makes a useful distinction between market entrepreneurs, who grow wealthy when the public freely purchases what they have to sell, and political entrepreneurs, who grow wealthy because government cripples their competitors or grants them a monopoly. Folsom even shows that some of our most effective and admirable businessmen have succeeded in the face of rivals who enjoyed government subsidies and privileges. I cannot finish a discussion of looting without mentioning the income tax. In another chapter, I explain my opposition to the military draft, an institution based on the idea that the government owns its citizens and may direct their destinies against their will. The income tax implies the same thing. Government owns you and graciously allows you to keep whatever percentage of the fruits of your labor it chooses. Such an idea is incompatible with the principles of a free society. Robert Nozick, the renowned 20th-century political philosopher, minced no words when it came to the taxation of earnings from labor. How, he demanded to know, was this any different from forced labor? In America, the average citizen, in effect, does unremunerated work for the government for the equivalent of 6 months out of the year. People who favor this system should be honest about what they are saying. We have the right to force you to work against your will. Strip away the civics class platitudes about contributions to society, which are mere obfuscations designed to engineer the people's consent to the system, and that is what the income tax amounts to. Frank Chodorov, a great stalwart of the old right, put it this way: the citizen is sovereign only when he can retain and enjoy the fruits of his labor. If the government has first claim on his property, he must learn to genuflect before it. When the right of property is abrogated, all the other rights of the individual are undermined, and to speak of the sovereign citizen who has no absolute right of property is to talk nonsense. It's like saying that the slave is free because he is allowed to do anything he wants to do, even vote if he wish, except to own what he produces. With a consensus not yet established behind the abolition of the income tax, although I have never ceased voting and speaking on behalf of such an outcome, I have done my best to eliminate income and other taxation in as many specific cases as possible, in order at least to make dents in the edifice in the meantime. For instance, I have proposed for all those whose income consists largely of tips that income in the form of tips be exempt from income taxation. I have proposed that America's teachers be granted tax credits, thereby increasing their salaries. I have proposed that people with terminal illnesses be exempt from Social Security taxes while they struggle for their lives. There is surely no moral justification for taxing people who are trying to maintain their very lives. What we should work toward, however, is abolishing the income tax and replacing it not with a national sales tax, but with nothing. Right now, the federal government is funded by excise taxes, corporate income taxes, payroll taxes, the individual income tax, and miscellaneous other sources. Abolishing the income tax on individuals would cut government revenue by about 40%. I have heard the breathless claims about how radical that is, and compared to the trivial changes we are accustomed to seeing in government, I suppose it is. But in absolute terms, is it really so radical? In order to imagine what it would be like to live in a country with a federal budget 40% lower than the federal budget of 2007, it would be necessary to go all the way back to 1997.